Today's biggest stories, tomorrow's newsmakers in the capital city. Your host is Michael Cohen for the Capital City Recap on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
Cloudy and 63 on a Monday evening here in Lansing, although can't complain after our amazing weekend, and we're back to the sunny skies tomorrow, so there you go. I'm Michael Cohen with producer Jesse Wiza. This is 1320 WILS. On today's program, thousands of American prisoners wrongfully convicted, on average serving 11 years behind bars before being exonerated. That's the finding of a new national registry. But is there any way to avoid these life-shattering mistakes? I'll talk to the University of Michigan law professor behind the new database. And Mark Zuckerberg, Facebook CEO, and the guy sitting on about $20 billion of wealth, getting married this weekend, and it's still not clear if he signed a prenup. I'll ask a family attorney if what he's in for if he did not sign an agreement, and if it's something that every couple should consider. But first, both public school teacher pensions and charter schools making news today in Michigan. And as the future of our public school education structure appears to be quickly changing, what is the future holding? To discuss that, I'm joined by Rick Traynor. He's the secretary treasurer for the Michigan Education Association, the state's largest teachers union. Rick, thank you so much for joining us here on 1320 WILS.
Well, thank you, Michael. It's great to be with you.
So today it looks like a complete reversal from what the Senate passed last week, their bill that would end pensions for new teachers. This morning, the House Appropriations Committee indicating that they apparently want to keep a hybrid pension 401k system intact, and that they also plan to pre-fund retiree health care. So what is your reaction to today's dramatic developments?
Well, actually, Michael, we're still trying to sort it out a little bit. I was handed a 63-page bill a couple hours ago, and reading through the first few pages, and it reads like a dictionary because it is one on the beginning. But, you know, we're looking at, and I wouldn't say it's a complete reversal of what was passed in the Senate. You know, there are a number of problems that we have with what was passed in the Senate, but, you know, it still doubles the cost of premiums for retirees. Retirees' health benefits, even for current retirees, people who played their whole careers by the rules, and now the rules are being changed on them after the game's been played. It eliminates retiree health benefits for new hires. That remains in the House version. It continues to have substantially higher contribution rates, as did the Senate. So it's not a complete reversal. There are a number of things that were changed that are somewhat positive compared to what the Senate passed. But it doesn't come near addressing what the real issues are. You know, the real issue that we have is the failure to pre-fund the retirement costs that are in it, and that continues. They do address that a little bit, and that's one of the favorable things in the House version that we like, is that they are attempting to actually address some of the problems at the source rather than at the result.
But I mean, that's history at this point. At this point, we're sitting on, what, $45 billion of unfunded liability. I think the pension portion is, what, $27 billion of that. Isn't it time to address this fact, considering that we can't go back in time?
Well, I don't think that we can go back in time, and I don't think that's the question. I think the question is, if these things were caused, and these were caused by deliberate actions, the position that we're in was caused by deliberate actions, and to say, well, here's what's happened. You know, it's kind of like an individual who goes on a world cruise and then comes home and calls the bank and says, listen, I already spent all the money, so I really shouldn't have to pay my house payment. You know, with regard to making that change for people who have already played their whole careers by the rules, that really isn't, you know, it's not a question of, well, it's already done, so just live with it. I find that difficult to accept. I think we do have to say promises were made and promises need to be kept.
Well, I mean, the state is responsible for the pension portion, right? But the health care portion, they don't have a constitutional responsibility to maintain those payments, right?
Well, yeah, if we want to resort to saying, well, technically it's not a constitutional responsibility, so the promises that we've made all along really don't matter. The historical issue is money was stolen from it in the 1990s, hundreds of millions of dollars taken out to balance the state's budget with a promise that it would be repaid, a conscious decision to turn it into a pay-as-you-go system rather than an actuarially pre-funded system. I think any financial advisor that you talk to will say that if you have an opportunity to have something pre-funded, you turn it into a pay-as-you-go. So bad decisions were made, and so now because bad decisions were made, the people who are the victims of the bad decisions have to pay for it. That's the fundamental philosophical issue that I think we really have to wrestle with as a society. Is that the way we really solve our problem?
Well, who else would be paying for it? Wouldn't it not be taxpayers in the state that would then be covering the costs if teachers don't?
Well, that's an interesting question. I mean, I know we didn't have a problem finding $1.8 billion last year to give to people unaccountably. We took $1 billion out of the school aid fund. What if we'd taken that $1 billion out of the school aid fund and put it into pre-fund some of these problem areas that we're talking about? Now, we weren't worried about that pre-funding when we took $1 billion out of the school aid fund, dedicated taxes that people paid in, taxpayers paid it in. We gave it to somebody else, and we didn't have a problem with that at all last year doing that. Instead of saying, well, you know, we got this big problem, why don't we utilize this? Now we've got an increase, we've got a surplus in the state budget projected, so they're talking about accelerating tax cuts while breaking promises to people that we made promises to.
I'm talking to Rick Traynor. He's the Secretary Treasurer for the MEA, as you know, the state's largest teachers union. So, Rick, you know, the Senate and many of those who oppose the idea of the state being responsible for pensions moving ahead, especially now that retirees are living so much longer, say that it's just not a sustainable model for the long run. They point to the private sector as a perfect example in the fact that they've shifted now to this 401k structure. Why should the state not begin to do the same?
Well, I don't know that it's not sustainable. I think that the part of what we have to look at is we have to address some of the root causes that can still be addressed. The reason that we're in this predicament is not because it's not sustainable. It's because of conscious decisions to defund. And it's been done in ways that I find are rather questionable as well. The continued corporate takeover of public responsibilities in the school setting, where we have a corporation come in and replace workers, and the promise is, you know, if you help us steal retirement from our employees and still have them do the work, then you can keep some of that retirement that we stole from them. And then the state turns around and says to the school districts, well, listen, because you have fewer people paying into the system, we're going to raise your rate, because that money that we told you could save if you outsourced, and it is being driven by leaders at the state level to outsource. They want corporate takeovers everywhere. It's one of the governor's supposed best practices is steal retirement from your people by turning them into private employees.
Well, you know, there are a couple of issues when it comes to this corporate shift. One is the issue of choice, and advocates say we need to give choice to parents and kids. But today there was a panel discussion all about charter schools at CMU this morning. It's part of the dedication to the John Engler Center for Charter Schools at CMU. News editorial editor Nolan Finley, that's Detroit News, was one of the speakers. Now, he said, quote, "We have to break our children free from the monopoly franchise of the education unions and public school bureaucracies." It's a sentiment that many people agree with, that the MEA dominates our school policies and they want to have other options. How do you respond to that?
Well, I disagree completely that MEA dominates the school policies. It's interesting rhetoric, but it's myth. It's just complete myth that we dominate school policies. And the fact is, we've got legislators that have done everything they can to prevent anybody from anybody that's any worker from having any control over their working environment. And that's one of the issues that we face. But the issue of charter schools, in Michigan, charter schools in Michigan are not the model for the nation. Charter schools in Michigan are run by four private companies, and many of them, if not most of them, I can't guarantee you that most of them, I don't have my documents in front of me on that particular item, but a significant number of them, we're run by out-of-state corporations, and we take Michigan taxpayer dollars. We talk about saving Michigan taxpayers' money, and then we take that money and we ship it to out-of-state corporations.
But what about the idea of giving parents and children this choice, a choice other than their local public school that, you know, may be failing them? What's the rational argument against that?
There have been school of choice programs available in Michigan through a number of school of choice options that have been available for years without turning the responsibility over to corporations. You know, I mean, how much choice does a person have when he sends his child to a school that is run, and the decisions are made based on profit and corporate profit made by a corporation from out of state. For me, I'd much rather deal with a local board and local government than an international conglomerate that's running schools for a profit.
Now, you say that the MEA does not dominate school policies, but do you agree that the MEA does wield an enormous amount of power when it comes to our school system here in the state?
Well, I guess I'd have to ask you to give me an example of something that we control.
Well, I mean, people would point to, I mean, even the fact that the MEA is able to dictate how money is spent when it comes to teachers, when it comes to salaries and so on. I mean, that's one of the things that advocates want to free the state of, is any kind of dictation of compensation, let's say, for teachers, whether it comes to their salary or their health care.
Well, I'll tell you, I spent 9 years as a local president in Mount Pleasant, Michigan, and I didn't bargain a single contract where we dictated a thing. It's a myth. I mean, they like to talk about that, and they get a lot of airtime, and because a number of people who happen to have the microphone say that we wield a big stick and that we control everything, you know, it's the same as the myth about we dominate the insurance market. Less than half of our members, less than at one point fewer than half of our members were involved in the insurance program that they say dominates the market, that it's a monopoly. There's not a single thing that's a monopoly, and we keep hearing about it all the time. But when I say give me a specific instance, I get a generalization, and that's the problem. Give me a specific instance.
Let me ask you this though: what do you see in the future here for the MEA, for our traditional public school system, considering all the changes that are now being made?
What do I see in the future? I see in the future. I believe the direction that the MEA would like to go is we would like to return to the point where local boards of education have options about what they can do in their school districts, and that local community members have some options. The state has interjected itself in every level, not just in schools, but in all issues involving public services. The state has interjected itself into local bargaining decisions. The state has interjected itself into what can and cannot be done at bargaining tables, how locals will and won't compensate their employees.
Just about 30 seconds left, but I do want to ask you, once we've opened the door, as we are now doing, for cyber schools and charter schools, do you really think we can ever go back to not having them be a big part of our education system here?
Well, you know, it's hard to tell what the future holds, and I wouldn't go out on a limb and say that I can predict what the future holds for anything. It's difficult to say. You know, I suppose the state could decide to defund anything. One thing that's proven in the last few years, they can decide to defund anything they want to defund.
Rick Trainer, Secretary and Treasurer for the Michigan Education Association. Rick, thank you very much for joining us. Certainly we'll want to have you on again to talk as this legislation moves forward.
Thank you, Mike.
We will be right back to talk about something very important, your hearing, because May is, in fact, Better Hearing Month. So hang on for that. That's next. I'm Michael Cohen. This is 1320 WILS.